Well, for the second time, Mark Meadows is the mayor of East Lansing. He was elected unanimously, 5-0, by the East Lansing City Council last evening. Now, the morning after his re-election, a few weeks ago, Meadows was on this program along with the two other new city council members, Eric Altman and Shanna Draheim. Meadows had this to say about downtown development in the city.
None of the three of us are anti-development. Obviously, we want East Lansing to move forward, development to take place and redevelopment to take place in the downtown where appropriate. I think the question was, how do you award, if you are going to award, incentives for developers to develop properties in the way that maybe we have set a vision for? That doesn't mean that there won't be the use of tax increment financing in the future, but I think all of us would like to see sort of a plan set forth that talks about when and how we will determine those things so the public is more aware of what it means.
East Lansing Mayor Mark Meadows recently here on Current State. His comments were edited, and you can hear the entire interview with Meadows, Altman, and Draheim at WKAR.org. Follow the links to Current State. Well, along those same lines, Lansing's main economic development organization sees a lot of business and job creation potential stemming from MSU's facility for rare isotope beams and other particle accelerator ventures. With that goal in mind, the Lansing Economic Area Partnership, LEAP, has announced a recruitment effort aimed at attracting similar businesses. CEO Bob Trezise says the area could create, quote, the number one particle accelerator industry in North America, unquote. With such potential in mind, LEAP and others have developed an action plan. Here to explain are two participants. Steve Willoughby is LEAP's chief operating officer. Welcome, Steve.
Good morning.
And Rachel Kunch is the head of Kunch Business Solutions, which has put together the effort's action plan. Welcome, Rachel.
Good morning.
This effort is aimed at recruiting businesses doing work that's related to what will happen at the FRIB and what is already happening, I take it, at NioWave and at Ionetics. Will you be, Steve, will you be trying to get existing businesses to relocate here to Mid-Michigan then? Is
that the heart of this thing? That is the heart of this thing. When you mentioned the FRIBs will come online in 2022. So that is quite some time away. Even though we see a lot of construction at that facility right now, there is some time before that's going to be completed. So really what the plan is focusing on, a few weeks back, there was a celebration of the 50th celebration of the cyclotron, the superconducting cyclotron, and it's really moving forward technologies and research that have already come from that. When you look at NioWave or Ionetics, they have an affiliation with the cyclotron in the past. So as we prepare for the FRIB to come online in 2022, we are taking action on what is going to occur today. Mm-hmm. So the cyclotron is really the facility of yesterday, and the FRIB is the facility of tomorrow, but there's an opportunity right now to pursue more companies similar to NioWave as well as Ionetics. And that's really what the action strategy is focused on.
And Rachel, you took a lead role in putting together this action strategy. Talk to us about that. What's in it? What's going to happen?
Certainly. So our firm worked on a regional assessment first, really looking at the competitive advantages of the Lansing region relative to the particle accelerator industry. And from that, we were able to identify over 180 companies from across the globe for LEAP and partners to be able to target to begin to attract here to the Lansing region. And then we also help them develop a series of marketing and outreach strategies so that we can start to set Lansing as a known place for particle accelerator industry cluster development.
And Steve, you're just making all of these companies aware of what's going on in Lansing. Is this basically an awareness raising exercise, or are you actively promoting what's happening here?
Well, it's a combination of a number of things. One of the key parts of the study was taking a look at things that we're good at and things that we need to improve at. But the main part that was really focused on our interest was the companies that Rachel mentioned, was identifying what is the companies within this space. If we were doing a similar attraction effort for automotive, you'd be able to go into North American industry classifications or NAICS codes and be able to quickly pull some industry classifications and have a relatively quickly a list of companies that you could target. Since this is a new emerging industry and there's companies really not within that space yet, Kunsch Solutions had to really dive into the process to understand and identify what the industry is. So that's what really separates this strategy apart from a lot of different other strategies that may have been done in the past, is we think it's very innovative and maybe the first one done for this particular industry in the U.S.
I imagine there are companies being formed, new companies being formed kind of on an ongoing basis. Did that make your job harder, Rachel?
Certainly there are a lot of companies that are being formed.
It's not like a deep dive in the automotive industry, if what I'm hearing Steve say is correct.
I think the challenge with this project was that there are a number of industries that cut into the accelerator space. So when we looked at all of the different industry classifications, there were actually over 65 that were potentials. And so we broke that down into four main sectors that are both in the particle accelerator industry space and that Lansing has a competitive advantage. And those include advanced manufacturing, information technology, biomedical, and logistics and distribution. So when you look across the particle accelerator industry, we already have key strengths in those areas. Defining the industry, that was probably the biggest challenge. But now that we've been able to do that, this list of companies is highly targeted for LEAP and partners to be able to start to reach out to those folks.
And LEAP is just making its way down the list?
Yeah, well,
there's a name and a phone number.
No,
call those people.
Actually, that's
how does that work?
That's a fair question. The part that I don't know if you've ever done any outside sales, but you're trying to make it from a cold call to a warm call to potentially a hot call where you have an actual referral, somebody making that connection. So we didn't want to be in a position where we just cold call. So part of the actual research that Kunsch Solutions did was really taking a look at what the connections were. So they identified the company based on the industry classifications, but then they went a lot further. And with something that's incredibly helpful for us, they began to look at alumni affiliations. Is there a Michigan State connection? Is there a Michigan connection in general? And then also, is there through LinkedIn or other social media sites, is there a connection with someone, a key decision maker within that leader?
And you're reaching out to those people.
We're going to reach out to everybody. Okay. We're going to reach out to everybody. They have a term that they call capital catalysts that we're going to be recruiting a lot of people. We don't want to be a cold call to go in. I've done enough sales in my life.
That can be a hard way to
that
go about
that can be a hard
it.
Way. But if we can get a referral and we can get somebody that says, hey, how about we make an introduction and we start doing that, that's when we can see the most bang and value for our time.
Our guests are Steve Willoughby of the Lansing Economic Area Partnership. He's the COO. And Rachel Kunsch is the head of Kunsch Business Solutions of Grand Ledge, who is also involved in this effort to reach out to businesses related to particle acceleration with the idea that Lansing could become a hub for particle acceleration high-tech businesses like Niowave, Ionetics, related to the FRIB, etc. Bob Trezise, LEAP CEO, didn't mince words when he assessed the potential impact on the Lansing area becoming a particle acceleration hub. He said, we can create the number one particle acceleration industry in North America. What gives this sector so much potential?
Michigan State University is a key part of it. When you look at the depth of research that's occurring within the borders of the university itself, and now that's spawned out with Niowave and Ionetics, you have a huge resource in the talent that's coming from the university as well as from the FRIB and the cyclotron in the past. Michigan State University has the number one physics program. You know, it beats out MIT, and a lot of people aren't aware of that. So we have a huge, huge asset in regards to the university. But also, they can't be something that can't really be overlooked is the manufacturing presence. We have a lot of people that have technical, precise know-how on how to manufacture things. And that is something that's crucial in the particle accelerator industry, is having skilled trades. You know, a lot of people think, well, I need to be a physicist. I need to be an engineer to work on these types of things. If you go through Niowave and see their facility, there's a lot of people using CNC machines. There's a lot of machinists that are actually working on components. And that's something through our history with GM and so on that we have a strong presence in and adds a lot of value to us.
How well do both of you understand particle acceleration?
well enough to be dangerous.
We've all learned a little bit more about it, I think, since we've landed the FRIB. And with NioWave and Ionetics as well, it's still kind of, it can be difficult to get your head around. But there are medical applications, there are defense applications.
Sterilization.
There's a number of areas.
Food sterilization processing, definitely.
Food sterilization and processing
yes,
is
sir.
Another one. Okay. Bob also referred to the landscape, to a landscape that we're already familiar with here in Lansing, and that's the automobile industry. The feeder industries that are a part of the automotive manufacturing landscape that cluster around manufacturing plants. Is that an appropriate comparison?
I think it is. I mean, when you look at it, the technology is, I like the way that you framed it up is in regards to understanding it. It's difficult to understand the actual process, but you understand the products and how they can benefit people. And when you look at the products that these companies are producing, they're manufacturers. They're incredibly advanced manufacturers. But when you look at what they need, it's the same logistics and distribution challenges that any business needs. It's what's my proximity to customer as well as what's my proximity to clients or suppliers.
Part of this effort is education as well. More classes that teach particle acceleration and such things.
Well, we have a huge capacity to educate students. We have over 75,000 people enrolled per year in higher education in the Lansing region. We also have a great base of engineering and IT programs where we can continue to grow is in adding our capacity for curriculum that's very focused on specialized areas that are specific to the particle accelerator industry.
But part of your plan is to increase the number of classes like this?
I think it's taking a look at, you know, what are the needs of the company. As you get a company that grows and they need more expertise in regards to certain skill sets in the company, it's taking a look at all the universities that we have within the region and determine if the necessary skill sets are coming from the universities to fill those positions.
Mm. Are other cities trying to do the same thing that Lansing is? There must be other cities around the country that have particle acceleration ventures and research. Are we essentially competing with other cities to become a hub?
Definitely. There's a lot of facilities throughout the U.S. that are looking to have a better environment of commercialization of technologies affiliated with their operations that would be identical, the JLab, the Fermilab, Triumph in Vancouver. So there are communities looking at doing that. So there's competition, but we feel with the recent investment by the federal government and the AFRIB, as well as the advances that NioWave and Ionetics are doing, that we're in a strong position to be at the forefront of that competition.
How soon do you think we might be able to tell our listeners about somebody that you've lined up? How confident are you that that will happen soon?
Well, as a result of this conversation, we had someone that was in transit to China for a trip, and they were able to make some visits as a result of this study with some companies in San Francisco, but also working with some of the existing companies and laying out what our plan was. They were able to make introductions to another company that is considering site locations right at this moment. So it could be in the near future. However, you know, when you look at the cyclotron and how long and the process, 50 years, you know, we're building an industry. We're looking at building an industry. So we're talking in time frames of 10, 15 years to really take a look back and determine whether or not we did what we were supposed to do.
Very interesting effort. We'll keep an eye on it. You stay in touch with Current State as well, Steve and Rachel, because we'll be interested to learn more. Steve Willoughby is LEAP's Chief Operating Officer. Rachel Kunch is the head of Kunch Business Solutions in Grand Ledge, which has put together an action plan to reach out to businesses related to particle acceleration to try to get them to come to Lansing. Steve, Rachel, thank you very much. Good luck. You can connect with us anytime, currentstate@wkar.org. Always interested in your feedback and your ideas for our program. Rapzilla, a website devoted to hip-hop music, recently published a list of the top 20 Christian rappers of all time, and it included a musician from Lansing. Current State Scott Pohl talked with Ose Moore. How long has Ose Moore lived in Lansing, Scott?
Well, Mark, he's a Seattle native who married into a family with Lansing ties, and he moved here in 2006. You might remember him as a guest on our Neighbors in Action segment a couple of years ago, talking about the All of the Above Hip-Hop Academy in Lansing. He's the director. I brought him back to WKAR to talk about being named one of Christian rap music's all-time greats.
Ose Moore, welcome to Current State.
Thank you for having me.
You know what most people think when they hear the word rapper, right? They think images like violence, sex, drugs. And for some people, it'll be something of a surprise that there is such a thing as Christian-based rap.
Yeah.
So give me an idea for how big the gospel hip-hop scene is.
Well, it's global now. It's funny because as hip-hop has developed, just in hip-hop in general, it was supposed to be something that would never stay. It was always just like a passing fad. It became big business, and it became an outlet for people all over the world. I think gospel hip-hop has kind of done the same thing, was slightly behind the curb. You know, obviously, because it's a much smaller pond, you know, but it's gotten some traction over the last 10 years, even has become, and some of the artists that are well known in that pool are actually known in just the general broad hip hop universe, too. So, yeah, it's definitely global. You know, I don't know the numbers, but yeah, there's a lot of listeners out there.
Does it get airplay?
Yeah, it definitely does. I think more on selective radio stations, I think typically, you know, radio is one of those, it's a convoluted industry. It just in general what gets played. But yeah, on certain radio stations, you'll definitely hear it.
Is there much of a market for live performance?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of guys who consider themselves gospel hip hop artists, and when I think they find a lot of their arenas for performance in Christian festivals and youth groups and churches and that sort of thing. Some people make their way around the club circuit, you know, like myself. But yeah, there's definitely opportunities there.
There are three other things that people associate with hip hop, and I want to talk with you about them one at a time. One is repeating your own name over and over again. Yeah. Do you do that?
Yeah.
Swearing. I'll bet you don't swear much.
I don't swear much. I mean, I say much. I mean, I stub my toe, and sometimes that's the only real good thing to say. No, I try.
On record?
Yeah, on record, no.
Okay.
No, definitely not.
And the N-word?
No, I try to avoid it at all costs. You know, it's one of those things that is, that's another, you know, topic for discussion. A whole other radio slot could be about that, you know. But no, I try to keep it PG.
So the national hip-hop website Rapzilla puts out a list of the 20 greatest Christian rap artists of all time, and you, sir, are on it.
Wow.
You're number 14. Did this come as a surprise?
It did. It really did. Like it, when I saw it, a friend posted me and said, "Hey, did you know you were number 14? Congratulations." So I was like, "What?" Dang. Went back and looked at it, and sure enough, there I was. So yeah, it was a pleasant surprise for sure.
Can this help your music?
You know, I used to be of the mind that every opportunity could help push you in the direction of your goal. And that's true if your goal is to, I mean, you have to clearly define what that is, you know. Every opportunity can be leveraged for those sorts of things. I'm at a place in my life now where I rhyme for sport, I rhyme for therapy, I rhyme for, you know, the fans and folks who are still paying attention to me, but I'm no longer pursuing it as a career, you know. Kind of have a sobering perspective as to what that means these days. But yeah, certainly, you know, for the lifespan of your career, every opportunity could lead to advancement for sure.
So like lots of musicians, you have a day job.
Yeah. Right now, yeah, I got a wife and two kids, and so I'm making sure.
You have
a
day job then.
Yeah, I'm making sure food is on the table and everything is full function.
You know? Sure. I'm talking with Lansing rapper Ose Moore, who recently was named one of the top 20 Christian rap artists of all time. Mm-hmm. We're going to play some music now. I wanted to pick a song and have you tell us a little bit about it first, okay? So let's talk about the song Synesthesia. I love that title, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. A good friend of mine, I'm part of a collective called Mellow Orange, based out of San Francisco, California, and one of the producers in that collective is named Freddie Joachim. You know, his vibe is very reminiscent of golden age of hip-hop, which would have been like in the mid-90s, you know, and that's kind of my tempo, it's my era. But the song was really just kind of addressing in my own personal journey in terms of, taking a step outside of my comfort zone. You know, so this concept of seeing the world in color, and I talk about my own journey as being an artist, but only ever using pencil. You know, because I was too afraid to actually commit to color. Like a double helix, secretly covered in brush strokes of another, so fluid and unafraid of that color. I draw, but I ain't never painted. Lame, ain't it? Especially because I wanted to even aqua to say it. I can't shake it, but yeah. In the song, I'm stating that I want to do it all in color now. You know, just put it all out there, whether you fail or fly or make it, you know, or achieve your goals. At least I gave it all that I had.
Another song of yours we want to talk about is called Don't Cry.
Yeah. And Don't Cry, the concept was, you know, after I'd, you know, made a living at doing music for a long time, and, you know, I'd always hear, hey, oh, when are you going to put another record? When's the next tour? You've been quiet. What's going on? You know, and interviewing myself and seeing what are my core values? Where am I at? Why am I okay with not pursuing music as hard as I was at one point in time? Inside, don't cry for me. I'm probably the opposite of what you're trying to be. Full-time job, wife, two cars, two kids, mortgage. Praise the Lord, I afforded through supplemental income off important. Instructing the youth because we overlook the importance. Trade lines across America, but we adore them. God bless the child that got somebody to support them. So believe them to more than they can vocals. Don't cry for me. I was able to confidently say, man, the stability that I'm able to have right now, and the relationship I'm building with my kids and my wife that I've been able to sustain and nurture and build is far greater than any live performance or any accolades from any record or show that I've ever experienced. And so the idea was, don't cry for me. I'm better than I've ever been right now. You know, it's good.
We're talking with Lansing musician Ozay Moore about his work in hip-hop music with a connection to gospel. The descriptions you've just given me about these songs don't seem particularly overtly Christian.
Yeah.
It leads me to ask you about how obvious it is when one listens to your music that this is Christian rap.
Yeah. I think.
Is it in your face that way?
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I once heard somebody who was a lot more explicit in maybe sharing their music as from a sermon perspective. He came to the conclusion that you don't have to be in your face with Jesus when Jesus is in your face. You know what I'm saying? And that's a complete different perspective, almost like polar opposites in terms of like how people go about branding what they do. I mean, like, I believe that I could live a certain way, and obviously that will affect my worldview and what comes out of my music. And to some respects, in a lot of ways, in America especially, I mean, the just saying Christian, I mean, that resonates in different ways of all kind of walks of life. Maybe they had like a preacher that treated them wrong, or they knew a hypocritical person. I mean, I'm a hypocrite, you know, everyone is, you know, but when you tie that to who you are or to what you're doing, it almost, it can very easily put a wall up in front of you and the person who you may want to have a conversation with.
Does gospel hip hop have a fan base that's built on the music? And what I'm getting at here is if it appeals to people who are also fans of, say, Eminem or Jay-Z or Kanye West, is there a crossover? Do you have listeners who listen also to more well-known, let's say, artists in this arena?
Definitely. I think so. Somebody who I look up to and admire, he's not in gospel hip-hop at all, but from an artist perspective, he said, if it's good, I'll listen to it. You know, if it's dope music, it's dope music, and that's what it should be. You know, so I think there are, like I said, there's some people who may have a personal offense with the concept of Christianity or a Christian per se, so therefore they shut it down right off the bat. But then there's other folks who are just, you know, I always say there's people who love music and there's people who like genres of music. And for those who like genres of music, you know, they're usually stuck in one place. But if you're a music lover, you can usually find anything in any genre, from country to classical to jazz to gospel, hip hop, even, you know, where that resonates with you. Yeah.
One last thing I want to talk with you about. You've been on Current State before to talk about the All of the Above Hip Hop Academy in Lansing. Is that still going strong?
It is. I think we've taken some time this year just to recalibrate and strengthen our core unit of active participants in terms of the teaching staff and crew.
Remind folks of what the group does.
Yeah, so what we do is we're one part educators, one part historians, one part mentor, and then another part just active members of the hip-hop community here in Lansing and abroad. So what we do, what we've done in the past, is we've held classes in each element, each foundational element of hip-hop culture, be it breakdancing, graffiti art, emceeing, and DJing slash beatmaking. And we use it as a tool to mentor youth. So we teach them the tools. We teach them the practicalities of the disciplines, you know, how to do it. But we also give them framework of where it comes from, how it developed, what were the precursors of that expression, and then how to socially engage in a healthy way with it, you know. So social responsibility too.
Well, I know you don't like to be labeled, but you must feel a great deal of pride in being named one of the top 20 Christian rap artists of all time by the Rapzilla website. Ose Moore, congratulations,
thanks
for joining us.
Absolutely.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
Look, she got a taste for the finer things. Top shelf shopping, designer name. She understands money because she comes from it. It's hard to understand loving, but she still want it and got a right to. But it's complicated now. Daddy put a diva in the child. Has space seated in the class.
And coming up on Current State, this week is National Homeless Week, and the leader of one local organization has something in store to help spread awareness. Mike Carl, founder of Homeless Angels, is living on the streets of Lansing all week with a camera and live streaming his experience. We'll check in with Mike Carl to find out how that's going. Plus, from La Nina to the dunes of Lake Michigan, MSU geography professor and chair Dr. Alan Arbogast ties it all together in our next installment of Current State's Geography Awareness Week series. That and more after the break. We're always interested in your feedback to Current State. We received several responses to yesterday's segment about Governor Rick Snyder's suspension of plans to allow Syrian refugees into Michigan. The governor wants a review of vetting procedures by U.S. Homeland Security in the aftermath of Friday's Paris massacre. Several listeners expressed disapproval of the suspension, of State Senator Rick Jones' support for it, and of me for not pressing Senator Jones harder for more details of his support. Barry Goetz of Okemos agreed with our other guest, Dr. Majid Katranji, who opposes the government's move. Dr. Katranji says it's unfair to focus on the Syrians when it's clear the terror threat is coming from numerous countries. He adds, quote, "I don't think you close your door to victims of war," unquote. You can comment about any of our segments online. Go to WKAR.org and follow the links to Current State, or email us, currentstate@wkar.org, and we always appreciate it. What does homelessness look like? Well, Homeless Angels founder Mike Carl wants to show you. For the last several years, Mike spent a week living on the streets of Lansing with his camera, live streaming his experience to give the public a firsthand look at life on the streets. He's doing it again this year in honor of National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. He first told us his story here on Current State in May of 2014. He joins us again now for our weekly Neighbors in Action segment. Mike, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Remind us what Homeless Angels is. What is your mission?
Well, we are a street-based organization that helps as many people as we can. We want to put boots on the ground and allow the community to get involved in helping people that are living on the streets and helping them get off of the streets.
So you want to get people on the streets in order to get other people off the streets.
That's basically right.
How it works?
Direct action is an amazing thing.
And how does it work? What do you do? You talk to the homeless? You offer particular services? What?
Well, we build that relationship, and I think that's the most important thing, is building the relationship with people, earning their trust. We do have a hotel program that allows us to put them in the hotel. It's the only hotel in the country where people from anywhere, California, call and pay for room credits for the homeless. And we put them in and try to facilitate them getting to services that can help them.
Are you trying to recruit people to participate in that?
Oh, always. Yeah. We think it's important that everybody joins in. We just went on a street walk with Representative Tom Barrett, and we took him down on the streets to see exactly what it was like just outside the doorstep of the Capitol.
When we talked to you a year and a half ago, Homeless Angels was relatively new. Mm-hmm. What's happened in the past year and a half? I know you wanted to get started on some work in Detroit.
Yep. We're still pushing through with that. We're working with the same hotel owner who has a hotel in Detroit. We'd like to model the same thing in other cities. I think this is an amazing program that allows the community to see where their donations go and see what the end result is. We can't help everybody, but we sure try.
This is Homeless Awareness Week. Tell us about the live streaming. Tell us what else you're up to this particular week.
This week, we're live streaming on Periscope and Livestream. We want the public to see exactly what homelessness is, from down under the bridges to right on the street, right where they, you know, right outside their doorstep. We're going in the woods around town. We're going into asking around in vacant buildings to see if there's families or people living in the houses. We want to try to find as many people as we can and try to help them the best that we can.
How does this year's experience compare to previous year's experience so far?
I've noticed there is a lot less people out on the street, which is a good thing. That's a good thing. But there are still people that are living out there on the streets, and we can't forget them. Because too often we walk by when we're getting our coffee, and these people are invisible. And what we want to do with this week and every day, really, is put a face, put a name, and put a story with someone that's somebody's father, somebody's mother, somebody's sister, somebody's brother, somebody's loved one. And they deserve to have their story told.
What's your most memorable encounter on the streets so far?
There was an older gentleman that was sitting on a park bench. He had a walker, and he was homeless. First time ever homeless. He was about 71 or so.
This is Lansing?
This is Lansing, downtown Lansing, right across from the Capitol Area Library. And he was sitting there, and he was hungry. We were able to get him a lunch, and we gave him a hotel voucher so that he can have a warm bed to sleep in, thanks to our wonderful community that are paying room credits at our hotel.
Mike Carl is our guest here on the Current State's Neighbors in Action. Mike is with the organization Homeless Angels, and we have him back here for the second time on National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. He is live streaming. He is living on the streets this week. And live streaming the experience. What made you want to start Homeless Angels?
Well, I was homeless myself. And after seeing the struggle and having someone help me in this similar way, I seen the importance of relationship building. I seen the importance of helping people. And I seen the importance of sharing the stories so that the community could see exactly what homelessness was. That it was somebody's relative, somebody's loved one. And they deserve love.
How long were you homeless?
About 6 months.
And who helped you, if I may ask?
There was a pastor that came from Kalamazoo, and he came every day, and he talked to me, he gave me lunch, and it took about 6 months for me to really trust him. But he came back every day, and that's what caught me, and that's why I wanted to go out into the streets, and I wanted to have that same opportunity to help people.
Did something in your mindset change after you determined, well, when you became homeless the first time, and then when you came out of it after your 6 months of being homeless, how did your mindset change during those periods?
Well, it let me know that there's hope, that no matter what we go through as human beings, any trial or tribulation, we can overcome it. But we just need that time, and we need love, and we need positive feedback. And out of that, I wanted to turn around and give it back to someone else, too.
What do you think the community needs to know about homelessness that they might not know?
That it can happen to anyone. I've seen lawyers. I've seen nurses. I've seen grandparents that have lost everything because of his wife or his loved one died that was taking care of them, and they were left. But also there's children out there. That age out of the foster care system or what have you, a runaway, everybody deserves love. And I think that if we reach out and see these stories, we can change somebody's life.
What keeps you going in this mission?
That there's still people out on the streets. And I think until my last breath, I'm going to keep going until nobody's out there and I'm walking by myself.
Now, you've alluded to a couple of ways that the community can help. You're looking for boots on the ground, as you put it, but you also alluded to the hotel vouchers. How can members of the community help you in your mission?
Well, they can call the Magnuson Hotel directly at 517-393-1650 and pay $28 for one night. There's also opportunities in our upcoming Christmas program that allows people to directly adopt homeless kids and put a smile on their face. Some of these kids think that there's no Christmas, so there's no Santa, and we want to change that.
Is there a seasonal dynamic to this? Are there more homeless in the summertime, for example, just because the weather is more hospitable than there are in the winter? Or
they're out on the streets, yes. But the ones that we find out there in the winter, some of them have never been there before, have never been homeless. So it's important that we get out there and try to help.
Mike, social media is an important element in what you do. Tell us how we can follow you and get involved.
Yep, you can follow us on Twitter at homeless_angels. You can go to Facebook /homelessangels or go to our website for all of our quick links, and that is homelessangels.org.
Mike Carl is the head of Homeless Angels. He's living on the streets of Lansing with his camera this week, National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week, and he's live streaming his experience. You've been learning more all about his organization and his mission here on Current State's Neighbors in Action. Mike, thank you and good luck.
Thank you so much.
And Current State is looking for more nominations for our Neighbors in Action feature. Please help us out and email us your suggestions to currentstate@wkar.org. It's Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Many thanks for joining us. Santa probably isn't the only one making a list right now. As the holiday season approaches, a lot of us will be braving long lines at the malls and big box stores with gift lists in hand. But if you're looking for handmade gifts over mass-produced items, you might want to check out a new pop-up shop in Lansing's Rio Town. And Current State's April Van Buren is here to tell us more about the River City Market. Hi, April.
Hi, Mark. So yeah, the River City Market is a series of design-focused pop-up retail events, and it's the brainchild of Lansing artists Amalia Bukos and Debbie Carlos. You might have seen their tent at a couple festivals this summer. They were at Art Attack, and now they're getting ready to move from that one-day format to a four-week-long pop-up holiday store in Rio Town. So I met up with Debbie and Amalia at their storefront where they're getting ready for their Thursday opening, and I asked Debbie where the idea for River City Market first came from.
Well, I guess it was maybe in the fall of last year where Amalia approached me and asked me if I wanted to maybe do sort of like a design market featuring artists and designers, small and independent, here in Lansing. And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
And what was sort of your vision for River City Market? What did you want it to add to the community?
Well, what we really wanted was, we are both lovers of art and design and not from the area either. So we moved here and know that there are a lot of things going on, but maybe we wanted something more in line with our aesthetic. And so we wanted just to be a part of the local scene, sort of being a part of creating that space for people.
And Amalia, how do you guys connect with the artists that you feature at River City Market?
We do a lot of our scouting for artists on Etsy, to be honest. And then I guess we get referrals from other people. And I feel like we're always on the lookout. So whether we're kind of online shopping in shops in other cities and hoping for other people to kind of reach out to us as well.
Do you guys have a specific focus in terms of Michigan or Lansing?
Yeah, we really want to be focused as locally as possible. That was a big part of the vision to begin with. So we try and feature a lot of Lansing artists. We have a lot of Michigan artists. And then in order to keep things really fresh and new, we have invited other designers from outside of state as well. And I know you guys have had a couple of events already, sort of 1 or 2 day pop-ups in the Lansing area. What kind of response did you get from that, Amalia?
I would say it was really positive. For us, we really didn't know if anyone would show up the first time we did a pop-up. So probably anything would have seemed really successful to us. But the fact that we only got positive feedback, you know, it almost made us nervous. Mm-hmm. From both the artists and attendees and volunteers. We really got kind of only positive feedback.
You guys are going from 1 to 2 day events to a 4 week long shop here in Rio Town. How different has it been preparing for this upcoming event?
Well, it's a ton more work, but I guess we first talked about having a 4 week long holiday pop-up maybe last year, but the timing just didn't work out for us to do it last year. So it was this year after we had, you know, gotten in some practice doing a 1 day event where we invited vendors to table at a space that we rented, or, you know, putting up a tent and showing a small collection of goods at, like, you know, Art Feast or Art Attack. So this is sort of like, sort of been building up to this, even though this is not the form that we will probably keep doing. We're still sort of experimenting with the forms that River City can take. So, but it's a really cool experience, and I think we've learned a lot.
And Debbie, what is appealing about you to Rio Town and sort of how you see the neighborhood here fitting into River City Market's vision?
Well, I just remember when I first moved to Lansing and I was sort of exploring and walking around, I just happened to walk through Rio Town and really, really liked sort of, you know, the historical aspect of it. And this window, we have this great hexagonal window, really attracted me to this storefront. And I've always loved it since I moved here 3 years ago, and it seems sort of cool that we're here.
Debbie Carlos and Amalia Bucos are the co-founders of River City Market. I'm here talking to them about their upcoming holiday pop-up here in Rio Town. I'm wondering, you know, you guys are both artists. What has your experience been like when it comes to making and selling and advertising your art here in Lansing? Debbie, I'll start with you.
I don't know that I focus locally that much. My online shop is on the internet, so it's sort of my reach, the internet, which is, I guess, everywhere. I have done a few shows here in Lansing, and that's been mostly positive, too. So, yeah, it's tough, you know, all the marketing. It's everything is up to you. You make all the decisions. But, you know, ultimately, it's what I love doing, and I couldn't think of anything else I'd want to do.
And Amalia?
Yeah, I only sell online as well, so I haven't done much marketing of my own jewelry in town. And we've really been focused on promoting other people in hopes of just encouraging them to keep making art, but then also hoping that local shops will decide to kind of pick up their work and wholesale with them. So, yeah, I feel like we're still figuring out how to do that well, but definitely focused on kind of other artists.
And it does seem like there has been more of an emphasis on kind of local arts and placemaking in the Lansing area. Do you guys see yourself as part of that?
Yeah, I hope so, at least in a small way. Yeah.
Do you guys see other opportunities in Lansing for the city or the community to, you know, create supportive spaces for artists, create places where artists can exhibit and sell and just, you know, support the local people who are around here making these goods that you feature here, but maybe, you know, aren't as visible in other places?
Yeah, I think it's something we could do more of as a city. It almost seems surprising that we were able to kind of find kind of a niche so easily doing this, because there isn't anything quite like this going on in the city. So yeah, I think there could be more of it going on. And there are some really neat shops in town that I think could focus probably more on local artists. They're already doing kind of handcrafted independent designers, but I think could find more Michigan or Lansing artists.
Mm-hmm. And Debbie, you guys have sort of, you know, local, statewide artist here. I mean, holiday shopping season is coming up, and I think a lot of people are gearing up to go to the mall to stand in line for hours and hours.
Right.
What kind of pitch would you make to someone to come here instead, to come and buy local, buy from people who are making art and making products in their community?
Well, I think the most important thing about shopping small and local is that when you support small and independent designers, your money is actually going to them. It's not going to a large corporation, going to, you know, offshore accounts or whatever. It's going to a person who is supporting themselves or their family. So yeah, I think that's probably the most important thing.
Yeah, I think your money is staying within your community. Mm-hmm. And I do think people in Lansing and in Michigan have a lot of Lansing and Michigan pride. And I think it makes sense to be supporting your own community. We also have a lot of really nice things. It's a well-curated shop. At the risk of sounding pretentious, we really focused on having cool things that fit in a certain aesthetic. And it's not that we don't feel like we need to be desperate or just take anything. It's a shop full of really nice things, things that are easy to gift, and things that will support local artists.
And Amalia, can you tell me a little bit? You guys have your grand opening on Friday. Can you tell me a little bit about what you have planned for that day?
So because it's a small space, we decided not to have a party, but it will be an open house. So basically, the things that will make it special will be that we will have food and drinks, and then we'll have a trunk show by Janelle Lehman, who is a local flower grower and then floral designer. And she'll be making wreaths, kind of modern wreaths to sell. So those are kind of the special grand opening events.
Amalia Bukos and Debbie Carlos are the co-founders of River City Market, a series of design-focused pop-up retail events in Lansing. Their four-week-long holiday shop launches this Thursday, and they'll be at 1136 and a half Washington Street in Rio Town. Debbie and Amalia, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you so much.
For Current State, this is April Van Buren.
Last year, National Geographic magazine created Geography Awareness Week to help young Americans better understand geospatial issues and recognize their roles as global citizens. Michigan State University plays the lead role in Geo Week here in mid-Michigan with a variety of public opportunities designed to create awareness about geography as both a discipline and as part of everyday life. All this week, Current State's presenting discussions about geographic awareness. Today, MSU professor and geography chair Alan Arbogast weighs in. Dr. Arbogast is best known for his research on the history of coastal sand dunes along Lake Michigan. Arbogast tells us how he maintains interests in both the disciplines of geology and geography.
I have one foot in geography, where I'm interested in why and where. Right. Where the dunes are, why they're there. And then I'm sort of a geologist in a way, I freely admit that. And then I'm interested in the accumulation of sand over time and what are the variables that have been involved in those formation processes of the dunes. Now, that's an interesting scientific question in and of itself. And that's fundamentally the way I look at it because it's fun. But it has real-world applications with respect to coastal dune management. I've been involved in some doing some consulting work over there for the state and providing my expertise in a variety of ways and in an effort to, say, predict where dunes might go, what development might do to them with respect to their stability now, and what overall impacts that might have in the face of regional environmental change. We have some sort of tantalizing evidence, we don't know whether it's legit or not, that the long-term evolution of the dunes might in fact be tied in some way to enzocycling, El Nino and La Nina. Now, El Nino is something that occurs in the eastern Pacific, right? With warming temperatures in that part of the ocean. That seems like it's a long ways away, but we're sort of seeing the effects of that right now in Michigan with this glorious fall that we've had and the fact that the prediction for the winter is a milder than normal winter with less precipitation. The impact that would have on the dunes is that there would be fewer strong storms going through the region, which would then stir the sand up and cause the dunes to move around and bury decks and porches and things like that, which people don't want to have happen. So it is geological in one way, but it's very geographical in another, because I'm thinking about the eastern Pacific and what that might have to do with, you know, the storm patterns here in the Midwest, which then affects where sand might be going. So it's all tied together.
That was MSU professor and geography chair Dr. Alan Arbogast. Dr. Arbogast continues Current State's week-long series on Geography Awareness Week in partnership with Michigan State University's Department of Geography. Tomorrow, an economic perspective from Dr. Elizabeth Mack. That's our program for today. Coming up Thursday, a federal appeals court last week decided to continue blocking implementation of DAPA, that stands for Deferred Action for Parents of American and Lawful Permanent Residents. The federal initiative would extend and expand opportunities to millions of America's undocumented immigrants. We'll talk with a local immigration rights advocate about the decision, along with a longtime MSU employee whose family is impacted. Plus, where's the snow? This time last year, we had snow on the ground in Michigan. What could this mean for our winter forecast and that apparent El Nino happening? We'll check in with MLive's chief meteorologist, Mark Torregrossa, to find out. All that tomorrow here on Current State. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Wharf. Katie Cook directed our show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Kevin Lavery, April Van Buren, Jamie Paisley, and Drew Hill. Get the latest Current State edition delivered straight to your smartphone every day. Just subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, we're on social media, Natch. On Twitter, KAR Current State, and on Facebook, Current State from WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. We hope you can join us Thursday. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR. Take care.